if you don't provide that Porsche Drive customer with a great experience, mm-hmm. they're going to stop. And you're going to get instant feedback when you're not doing something right. And that's the power of this model.
All right. All right, all right, all right. Let's do this, shall we? Episode 111 of Future Proof, and we are marching bravely into September. As crazy as that sounds. Time in a COVID world moves, exponentially fast, apparently. Just one more thing we didn't know about pandemics before 2020 came along. I mean, seriously, this is ridiculous. Where's the year gone? It's funny how fast time flies when you're spending most of it sitting on your ass in your house, I guess. Anyway, I am your host, Bill Sheridan. I am happy to be here. I am happy that you are here. Let's get this thing rolling, shall we? Really quickly, let's start by reminding you that this week's show is brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Also, if you haven't already, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, which I think is now called YouTube Music. We're everywhere, and subscribing is the easiest way to get your weekly dose of Future Proof. So be sure to hit that subscribe button. And that, my friends, brings me to this week's topic. Pretty smooth transition there, huh? We're talking about subscriptions, which aren't anything new. If you're old enough to remember, you used to subscribe to your daily newspaper before you didn't anymore. Maybe you were like me and subscribed once upon a time to the BMG Music Club. Remember that? Get 12 CDs for a penny and then sign your life away to buy the monthly selection over and over and over again, whether or not you actually liked that music. It was yours. You subscribed to it. Can't do that anymore, by the way. BMG officially folded in 2009. You know what you can do, though? You can subscribe to your car, Porsche. I guess that's Porsche, actually. Jeep, BMW, Cadillac, Hyundai, Lincoln, Volvo. They all have subscription services. You can now subscribe to your car. You can subscribe to your home, or rather renovations for sustainability and energy efficiency and home repairs. This one's out of the Netherlands. It's called a woning abonnement. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's something along those lines. Or how about subscribing to your house itself? So this is a service called roam.co. That's roam.co. By paying $1,600 a month, which is maybe half of what it costs to live in an apartment in San Francisco, you can get access to co-living spaces around the world, right? The project is piloting in Bali, Miami, Buenos Aires, Lisbon, and Kyoto, and it seeks to radically redefine how the digital nomad generation finds a place to live. As our website states, just show up with your bare essentials and immediately feel at home. So there's that. In this COVID world, you can subscribe to face masks. There's an entrepreneur in Richmond, Virginia, who is offering monthly deliveries of either 50 or 500 masks. There's TaskRabbit for handymen and Breather for renting office space by the hour, or something called Dobies for on-demand cookies. There are clothing subscriptions and beauty subscriptions and food and drink subscriptions and subscriptions for dog owners and cat owners. There are subscriptions for books and stationery and crafts and fitness and adult-oriented fun and games. Right on, man. There are apparently subscriptions for everything. In fact, how much do Americans spend on subscriptions. Depends on who you ask. The New York Times says each of us spends about $640 a year on just digital subscriptions like streaming video and music services. Next Gen Personal Finance puts the number for our subscriptions at about $237 a month, or a whopping $2,844 a year. And the pandemic has only increased our appetite for subscriptions, apparently, because, well, we're all sitting around the house looking for something to do, right? Netflix added a record 15.8 million customers last quarter. Disney Plus jumped by 22 million subscribers in just 2 months, probably mostly due to Hamilton alone, I think. Apple is working on plans to reinvent itself as a services business. It's astounding, really, how much we and our economy have come to rely on subscriptions. So the question, accounting and finance professionals, is what does this mean for you? And the answer, actually, is a lot. I mean, really, who says you can't offer a subscription for your services? Who says someone can't subscribe to your firm? Which brings me to this week's guest. He is Ron Baker. Ron, he's been the most vocal evangelist, that I know in favor of the concept of value pricing, of charging folks based on the value you provide rather than on the amount of time you spend providing it. He has spent more than 20 years trying to convince folks in our profession to trash the timesheet. And now he's come to the conclusion that there's something more at play here. It's not just about assigning a value to our services. It's about creating a lifelong relationship with the client. It's about a subscription, in other words. And if you haven't been paying attention, folks, start paying attention now. There's no reason why your clients shouldn't be subscribing to your firm. I mean, think about it. Think about the things you subscribe to, the things you pay recurring value for. Now, think about what you provide to your clients, right? Is that value any less? Is the relationship any less valuable? Why can't a subscription business model work in an accounting and finance environment? And the short answer is there's no reason why it can't. I spoke recently with Robbie Kelman Baxter. She's the author of The Membership Economy and The Forever Transaction. And she told me why CPAs need to be paying attention to this stuff. And this week, Ron Baker takes it all a step further. He calls the subscription value, I'm sorry, the subscription model, rather, he calls it value pricing 2.0. It's a completely different business model and one that we all need to be paying very, very close attention to right about now. And Ron's here to tell us why. So this is an eye-opening and thought-provoking conversation, and I'm glad you're here to have it with us. Here is my conversation with Ron Baker. Ron, how have you been through all this craziness? Of
very good, Bill. Hanging in there. Hanging in there. And of course, I'm off the road like a lot of prior road warriors were, but still keeping busy. It's just amazing how when you have capacity freed up, how quickly it gets filled with other opportunities. So even though some doors closed, a lot more opened up.
It really was kind of interesting. And I say this knowing that, a lot of people aren't as fortunate as maybe you and I are to be in this position, but like when everything shut down and we all went virtual, I was kind of wondering how busy am I actually going to be? And it ended up since the pandemic hit, we've been busier than ever. So it's just kind of a weird paradox there.
Which is a good thing though, because it kind of keeps my mind off what's going on with these lockdowns and everything else. So
that's a very good thing. Yep. You've been a longtime evangelist for killing the billable hour and pricing according to the value we provide as opposed to the amount of time we spend doing it. And before we get to the topic at hand for today, which is subscriptions, I guess my first question is, how are we doing here? Where does the profession stand on value pricing at this point, in your opinion?
Oh, I'm a paranoid optimist. We have the billable hour back on its heels.
Nice.
It's on the defense. It's got no friends. even its friends, intensely dislike it. I think that the end of the billable hour while it may not be in reach, is definitely within sight.
That's good news, especially for you who've been kind of preaching this for so long. It's been a long road.
It has been, and a lot of firms are going down this road, and not just the smaller firms, like where it all started with the solos and maybe the 2, 4, 10 partner firms, but now making inroads into the big, the top 200, the top 100, the top 50, the top 25, mm-hmm. and even the top 10, top 5, top 4.
Wow.
That's huge.
And now that we've gotten that far with value pricing 1.0, we get to this point where, I mean, you've called subscription-based business models value pricing 2.0. And I guess I'm curious, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, if real quick history, if you go back and you look at hourly billing priced the inputs, right? It looked at time, and that was the basic input to get the price. And then between hourly billing and value pricing 1.0, we had this weird hybrid, some people called it fixed fees, where they would basically estimate the time up front that they thought it would take, and they would fix that price. Now, that's not pure value pricing because it's not pricing the customer. You're pricing the outputs with a fixed fee. Mm-hmm. I call it value pricing and drag, or hourly billing and drag. but it's still pricing the outputs. Then value pricing 1.0 came along, at least the way we teach it. And that taught you price the customer, not the services, because value is subjective. Each customer has different needs and wants and desires for future states and transformations. So you need to customize the pricing like eyeglass prescriptions. But value pricing 2.0, Bill, is a completely different business model. And this isn't just a pricing change. It's a business model change, and it's deep, and it scares people. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm so passionate about this. This idea I'm about to present scares the hell out of people. Mm-hmm. And that is precisely why I know it's a fantastic idea, because I will tell you that it's the same reaction I got when I presented value pricing back in 1994. Okay. Nobody was doing it. So I know this is a good idea. Plus, we've got all this empirical evidence, not just from COVID, but even pre-COVID days, that subscription businesses are just doing incredible. Like, most of the unicorns of the world are subscription-based. All the growth in the COVID era has come from subscription economies or subscription type businesses. And with subscription business model, you don't price the customer, you're pricing the relationship and the portfolio. And people always say, well, relationship, customer, what's the difference? You're playing semantic games. No, I am not. There is a massive difference between pricing the relationship and the portfolio than pricing the customer.
And what is that difference? What
the difference is, the relationship is the customer is subscribing to your firm. It's not buying it's not engaging in a transaction. As your guest Robbie says, it's a forever transaction, but I don't even like that term because it's not transactional based, it's relationship based. Mm-hmm. The relationship becomes everything in this model. And what matters now is customer success. And so the best example I can give you is today in about 6 cities. In fact, they just expanded into Los Angeles yesterday. Porsche Drive has a program where you can subscribe to their cars. Now, there's 2 tiers. So there's 2 options. I think it's $2,500 a month and $3,500 a month. And depending on the one you select, you get availability to, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 different models of Porsche. And they pay for everything except your gas and tolls. Insurance is covered, DMV, registration, all of that stuff. Maintenance, you can swap out different models unlimited as much as you want. So I can have a convertible today and I can say, hey, I got friends coming in for the weekend. They want to do some wine tasting. I need an SUV. They white glove out an SUV, pick up the convertible, take it away. Same thing, if I need any type of maintenance, they'll drop off a loaner or another car. And people say, well, how is this different from a lease or even purchasing? Because it's not tied to a car. Mm-hmm. You're subscribing to Porsche. It is a direct relationship with the company. That's the power of subscription. The relationship is everything. It's not just something we give lip service to. It is everything. And that's, I think, incredibly powerful.
So I guess the first question that comes to my mind when I hear something like that is how, what could that look like in the accounting and finance space?
The accounting and finance space, if you really think about the what we're providing to our customers, is we're not doing a series of tasks. You know, a professional is not paid for a series of tasks. A professional is someone who is responsible for achieving a result rather than performing a task. I mean, if I want a series of tasks, I hire a day laborer, you know, walk my dog, clean my gutters, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I hire a professional, a doctor, a lawyer, a CPA, because I want a result. I want an outcome. I want some type of transformation. I'm in the status quo and I have some desired future. Maybe I want to grow my business, make it more profitable. Maybe I want to do retirement planning. Maybe I want to send my kid to college. Maybe I want to build my dream home. Maybe I want to plan my legacy for after I'm gone. We do this all the time as CPAs, but we don't use this language. When you're in a subscription model, you're basically saying to the customer, anything this firm is capable of doing, you are covered. So it's no longer about tasks and deliverables and outputs. It's not even about scope of work. It's all about covered and non-covered. So the model for this is concierge medicine or direct primary care medicine, because it's been done in that sector going back to 1996.
Yeah,
so you have a lot of empirical evidence for this model already.
You had mentioned that before, that this is an example of, you know, a service-based profession that's doing it successfully. So how are they using this model? Primary care physicians, concierge physicians, what does it look like in their world?
Yep, you're seeing a lot of direct primary care, which is kind of a cousin of concierge. It's in the same family, but it usually goes for a lower price point. It's serving more the middle class, where concierge is more, you know, upper middle class, maybe even top 1%, some of the practices. But the bottom line is, for both of these types of practices, they're usually general practitioners, you know, family physicians, although a lot of specialists are moving in, pediatricians and nephrologists and other specialties are starting to go to this model. This model shuns insurance, doesn't take insurance. It's a direct subscription. They were the first to do telemedicine and emails and, you know, all of that. You can have complete access to your doctor. They'll respond to you very, very rapidly. You can get usually same day appointments, because while the typical physician has 2,400 to 4,000 patients, the panel of patients in a concierge practice can be anywhere from 50 to 100 up to maybe 800 to 1,200 at the most. Mm-hmm. So they have less patients, which means they can spend more time with you, and not only to heal you when you're sick, but to keep you healthy. So I just went out to a concierge practice here in the Bay Area, and I just want to read you a couple bullet points from their website. Yeah. Develop a long-term relationship with your doctor. Access your physician and medical team when and where you need to. Benefit from a proactive approach to your health, including preventative and integrative medicine. Receive customized care specific to your individual needs and preferences. Referrals to the best specialist care when you need it. So let me ask you, Bill, who's that sound like? Sounds like CPAs to me.
Yes,
you know, if you ask a doctor why they got into medicine, they'll tell you to help people. If you ask a CPA why they got into accounting, they'll say to help businesses or to help people.
And that's, like,
we've got too many patients in our panel. We need to shrink it so we can spend more time per patient, go deeper with them, really enhance that relationship, invest in that relationship. And I hate to say this because I've been preaching it for almost 30 years. Value pricing 1.0 pays lip service to the relationship. You can do value pricing 1.0 all correctly and still ignore the relationship or devalue the relationship. You can't do that in a subscription model because now that relationship is at the center. If you don't provide that Porsche Drive customer with a great experience, mm-hmm. they're going to stop. And you're going to get instant feedback when you're not doing something right. And that's the power of this model.
And I'm seeing, I can almost see the parallels here. But you, I mean, when you mentioned the one thing that stood out in that whole conversation about the physicians is the focus here on preventative medicine, where, you know, most of the time when we talk about seeing a doctor, it's to treat an illness rather than to, you know, make or keep us healthy. And that, I guess that's the kind of relationship that we're looking at from our accounting and finance professionals as well.
I'll give you an interesting fact about concierge doctors, patients, and DPC doctors, direct primary care doctors as well. Their patients are admitted into ERs much less frequently. Their patients are healthier. They have fewer sick days and they take fewer prescriptions. Mm-hmm. And this is so common now, the drug companies have started to raise an eyebrow at this, going, hey, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a beautiful thing because, and what I hear from the concierge doctors is we've had to retrain our patients to call. We want to hear from them because they're not selling time. They don't care about time anymore. They have the capacity because they have a fewer panel of patients. And what they really want to do is develop a deeper relationship. And so they've had to retrain, re-educate their customers to call them when they're healthy, to come in when they're healthy so they can do these other things. The other interesting thing is, and I think this applies to CPAs as well, a concierge doctor will tell you, Bill, you're covered for anything that we're capable of doing under this roof. Now, you could still have different options. Don't get me wrong. We can talk about that. But the bottom line is what we're capable of doing under this roof is continuously expanding. You know, a lot of these concierge doctors have MRI machines or they have ultrasounds. They can do diagnostic tests, blood work. They can do, a lot of them even have pharmacology. They can dispense drugs. Whatever it is that you need that we can do, you're covered. Now, if you come in and you have cancer or you need a specialist, that's obviously going to be separate, probably billed to your insurance. But your concierge doctor is going to be the quarterback in that relationship. He's probably going to refer you to the person. He's probably going to go with you to the appointment with the oncologist and sit there. Some of these guys will travel to you or your office or your home when you need them. And this is just a deeper relationship, but that's why we became CPAs in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you've probably run into versions of this at some point, but I'm guessing that there are going to be folks out there who will hear something like this and say, you know what, my relationship with my clients is just fine. B, I'm making money hand over fist. See, I've got no time for this. Why would I consider making a change this monumental? I guess my question, what's happening these days that makes this so important to be paying attention to?
Because when you build a subscription-based business, it can scale as rapidly as you want it to. If you want to add more capacity, more team members, more partners, things like that, it's a deeper relationship with the client. But I guess the ultimate answer to your question is subscription-based businesses are more valuable because they have annual recurring revenue, and investors and venture capitalists love annual recurring revenue. So whereas a typical hourly billing firm might sell one time, 1.25 times gross revenue, and a VP firm, a value pricing 1.0 firm might sell at multiple of 2, maybe 3, a subscription-based business would probably sell at 5 to 7 or 8.
That's like the golden ticket right there, that recurring revenue. And
that's it.
All right. So, what do we need to do to get there? What are some logical first steps for folks in our profession? If they want to move from 1.0 to 2.0, what are the first steps?
Yeah, and there's three types of adoption models. If you think about this, there's the, you know, you can do a trial on this, and we've seen some of this during the COVID. I'm looking at one here from a firm that put out a subscription plan just for COVID support. He had three tiers, three options. The middle included access to a lawyer. So if you had any legal issues, you know, with all the PPP stuff, or you had to do any type of restructuring of your business and you need a lawyer, that was available. And then at the top option, you had also access to a certified financial planner. If you had to redo your, you know, whatever, your retirement planning or your portfolio. And what he found with that was he was getting calls. He was getting new clients that had other CPAs, but their CPAs weren't talking to them about all this PPP stuff and COVID, and they just didn't know enough about it. And so he picked up a lot of clients by doing this. And now he's looking at it going, because he's a VP 1.0 firm, now he's looking at it and going, I could do this across the entire firm. There'd be no reason not to do this. So that's an example of a trial. And although we have seen some of it in COVID, I think that's a unique opportunity. The problem with a trial, like when you say, well, I'm going to do this on a few clients, or I'm only going to offer this subscription to maybe my best clients, that type of thing, or my tax clients, whatever. The problem is, yeah, it's low risk, but it's also low reward. It may demonstrate a lack of commitment. Then there's, you know, where there's the all-in pivot, where you just do it like Adobe did it. You know, when Adobe went to do this, it did a test market in Australia, and then they went for it, and their stock dropped. They took a huge cash flow hit. The investors were upset. But of course now Adobe's thriving, and they validated, you know, the model. And I think ultimately firms are going to have to do that. They're going to have to make a decision, because this isn't value pricing 1.0. This is a different model. The income statement looks different. It rolls forward with annual recurring revenue. It doesn't just look backwards. And it's not easy. It scares a lot of people, because I'm really kind of, what I'm saying here is all you can eat buffet. And that freaks people out, because they think about the one-off jobs or whatever that are really expensive and say, well, how would I handle that in a subscription? You know, and it's like, yeah, you've got to account for that. And that's the second part of, remember I said value pricing 2.0 prices the relationship, and this is key, and the portfolio. Mm-hmm. The portfolio is the insurance component. So what's going to happen here, Bill, is the way I recommend firms do this is rank your clients from low to high in terms of revenue. And of course, this varies dramatically by firm. But, you know, say you have a two-partner firm, you might have a client, you might have your lowest client maybe $1,000. Sometimes it's even lower. It's kind of shocking. And then you might have a high-end client that maybe you do an audit for, or a whole bunch of other work. And I don't know, it could be $100,000 in some firm. Well, think about that for a minute. Your low end's a grand, your high end's $100,000. That's not going to work in the portfolio. You're going to have to make a decision, a strategic decision about what does your firm want to be when it grows up. Stop trying to be all things to all people. You're never going to make everybody happy. You're not tequila. And you have to decide what kind of customer you want to have. So either focus on the low end, focus on the high end, focus somewhere in the middle, but narrow the band. Once you narrow that band, then you can multiply the price by 3, 4, or 5. And that's going to account for the actuarial portfolio of some customers in some years are going to use you more. For example, if you offer tax services and audit representation is one of the things your firm does, well, then you might have 2 or 3 customers that get audited, right? And you're going to cover them. Yep. But all the other customers are paying for that protection too. This is an insurance model to some extent, and you're taking advantage of that in the pricing. That's reflected in the pricing, because that's giving the customer peace of mind.
How, you know better than I, you've been out beating the pavement on this stuff for a while now. How open are the folks in this profession that you've talked to this type of thing? I mean, it took us more than 20 years to get to this point with value pricing 1.0. Are we ready to go this route yet, or are people listening?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you some empirical evidence on that. One, you can ask any audience, how many things do you subscribe to in your life? And usually you get a list of at least 5, some 20, if you include like wine clubs.
Right.
Then you can ask business owners how many things they subscribe to. And I was just talking with David from Jetpack, and he says, I've got 100 subscriptions in the business here, Jetpack Workflow. 100 subscriptions, 100 things he subscribes to in his firm, not him personally. And so I think it's the subscription economy has proved itself in terms of ownership versus access, just like the Porsche. You don't really want to own it because then you have to maintain it. You have to worry about all that. If I subscribe to it, I get to drive the latest and greatest and I can switch them out and there's no mileage restriction and all of that. And now I have a direct relationship with the company. So people are much more this resonates with them far more than value pricing did. Value pricing was a real foreign element being introduced into the body of CPA firms, and their immune systems fired up and they just fought it off. Yep. This one, because we're so used to subscribing to things now, especially during the lockdown, Disney Plus, I can't begin to tell you some of the numbers of just during the COVID lockdown months of what some of these businesses have grown. New York Times, almost 700,000 new subscribers. Disney Plus, all of these companies, Peloton. Just amazing, amazing growth. In fact, they're some of the only businesses that are growing during the COVID crisis are subscription-based. In fact, they're growing the quickest. But the other thing is, I shared this idea with digital CPA on a webinar a couple weeks ago. And at the end, they polled the audience and said, how many of you are considering the following types of pricing models? And subscription came out on top with 71%.
Wow.
Now, that's a younger group. They're more digitally savvy and all of that. So it's not a random sample. But I would say I get less resistance when I present this, when we present this idea, we get less resistance. Some of the biggest resistance I get are from the consultants that are doing value pricing 1.0. they don't see it because this blows up their model and they know it. But you know what? Business models change all the time.
Right.
This is nothing new. And when business models change, pricing models change. And you either adapt or you're going to be left behind.
This is going to be fascinating to watch and see what kind of impact it has. You mentioned Porsche earlier. What are some of the other like of your favorite or coolest subscription models that you've seen out there that are working?
Oh, geez. One of my favorite is this outfit, which is a national franchise called Hassle Free Home Services.
Okay.
And this outfit, you subscribe to them, and I want to say it's like $250 a month, something like that. And Bill, they just do your to-do list on the weekend of all the things around your house that you're just not looking forward to do. You change the batteries and the smoke alarms and, you know, plane the door because it's scraping, fix the hinge, you know, fix the screens. They've changed the filters in your HVAC unit. You're supposed to dump out a cup of water from your hot water heater, which I didn't know. If you go to their website and you look at what's covered under that subscription amount, it's a fascinating list. I mean, I'm a homeowner and I didn't know, you know, a fourth of what was on that list. I'm like, really? You're supposed to do that?
Is cleaning the gutters on the list?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if gutters are, I'm looking at the list, check fire extinguishers, utilities, drain this, test gas, kitchen bath. I don't see gutters, exterior.
Line up today if gutters were there. So that's amazing. That's
well. Awesome. And then what's interesting about this model is that's kind of the first hurdle. So you subscribe to them, and then if you want a deck or you want a bathroom remodeled, kitchen remodeled, that's a special project. They do those separately. So it's not an all you can eat model like I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then they'll do that for you. Now here's the question: when when you subscribe to this company, who are you going to hire to do all the other stuff? Of course, you're going to hire them. You have a direct relationship with them.
Right.
And so, and they get each franchise on average gets about 50% of their revenue from these, you know, one-off type projects. Now, I think in our world, there's a way to make it all you can eat and more like the concierge. But I'll give you another mind-blowing statistic just to show you how scalable subscription businesses are and why they're growing so rapidly during this, even this COVID epidemic. Porsche, when Porsche launched Porsche Drive, it's called, is the program, they launched it in Atlanta. And then they rolled it out to San Diego and Phoenix and don't ask me why, Toronto and Las Vegas. And now they just opened up in LA. 80% of the people that are signing up with this Porsche program are new to the brand. They've never had a Porsche before.
Really?
Here's my question. What do you think they're going to be driving for the rest of their lives?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Isn't that what we want? We want lifetime customers. Well, we're not going to get that if we have too many and we're kind of like a general practitioner with 4,000 patients where he gets to spend a sum total of 7 minutes with you and only sees you when you're sick, whereas a concierge doctor's got a totally different relationship. And that's what I mean by the relationship is at the center of this model. It's a deeper, more caring, more proactive relationship. It has to be. Plus, innovations baked into this model. You constantly have to add services, just like Netflix and Amazon Prime. They're constantly adding services and innovations, but notice that your pricing is not changing when they do that.
This is going to be fascinating to watch to see where this goes. It's going to have I think it's going to be huge for this profession. Ron Baker, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
Great stuff there from Ron Baker. You can learn more about Ron and his work at verisage.com. That's verasage.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute, the BLI's framework. The Future Ready Learning Framework, that is, outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. And that framework is all about gaining and maintaining a deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's that, folks. Have a great week. Talk to you again soon.